A proponent of user fees is happy they're gone from the Obama budget. I'm Paul Flagg, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Bob Poole, who is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation, which is a group which advocates market solutions rather than government intervention whenever possible. And we're here to talk about a headline that jumped out of Bob's latest newsletter at me. It said, "Two cheers for the administration's ATC user fee decision." And the reason that jumped out at me is because Bob has been a proponent of user fees. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Paul.
So what did they put in your drink?
Well, I mean, it's possible that people can learn over time. And I think I have learned. I've advocated user fees primarily as a means of putting the users of air traffic control in charge of the system. In other words, as to make them be genuine customers who can call the shots of what they want and what they don't want out of the system. What the Obama administration had proposed under the name of user fees was basically to put in a different form of taxation than the current fuel and ticket taxes. But the money would still be taxed. It would, even though it was called a user fee, it would go to the Treasury and be appropriated annually by Congress, and all the same problems of micromanagement of the air traffic control system that we have today would still be there. And in fact, the only positive thing about it is that a different structure for the taxes might bring in more revenue over time, because it would be better proportion to the growth of actual air traffic activity, and that could make the problem worse in some respects by what some people call feeding the beast. In other words, giving an unreformed FAA even more money to work with when they're not very good at performing with the money they have.
This, to me, cuts through the argument and the barrier between the two sides on the argument, I think, on user fees.
I hope so.
Because I think that what happens is people start shouting at each other very quickly. I mean, part of your point has always been that we need to have people who use services pay for them. But the other side
Sure.
is, without some say in the FAA process, we have problems that could be solved by user fees.
Yes.
I mean, if it's done right.
That's correct. And the key is doing it right. And I think the most important thing is governance reform. You know, figuring out how to make a governance model for what's now the air traffic organization, part of FAA, and making that really able to and willing to perform to deliver cost-effective solutions to make better air traffic control, for which there's really a business case for each of the different categories of users of the airspace. And we're a long ways from that with the way FAA is set up today.
Okay, now the question that always comes up when we get into this area of the philosophy is it ever possible for general aviation, which is not seen as big a political player,
right,
to have the clout to effectively represent its positions?
Well, that is really the ultimate question here, and I think we can learn some lessons, not all, but some lessons from NAV Canada. The principle under which the Canadian commercialized system is governed is a stakeholder board of directors. Now, it doesn't mean we should slavishly copy the exact way they've done it, but I think that principle gives us something to work toward. And what I hope to do is get a real dialogue going among all the different elements of aviation, which would include, the AOPA type GA, the business jets represented by NBAA, the air taxi and flex jets and net jets and so forth that are represented to some extent by NATA, cargo airlines, regional airlines, low-cost carriers, and the major legacy carriers. All have somewhat different interests, and all need to be represented as stakeholders, and as do, frankly, the controllers who operate in the system, and managers. These are all stakeholders, and the airports, too. These are all stakeholders. So that's a much more complicated structure than what we actually see with NAV Canada. But I think that principle of creating a board that the airlines, or one category of airlines, cannot dominate because, they wouldn't have the votes to do so. But that does recognize that they are major players in the system. That's an art to craft such a thing. And I think it can be, the only way to get it is by dialogue and, some frank, honest discussion within the aviation community. Congress is never going to give up control of the details of where the money gets spent and what it gets spent on and when it gets spent, unless there's a completely unified aviation community that says, you know, we've got to make big changes in how this thing is governed in order to get the service that we need.
Okay, now one of the arguments in the user fee debate is that if you fund it completely on user fees, you get into a situation like our current economy where revenue is not generated rapidly enough to to cover the costs because some costs are fixed and don't go down.
And right, and actually I addressed that in another article in this month's issue of ATC Reform newsletter. And that is, again, another lesson from Canada. Canada has, from the very outset, NAV Canada has a reserve fund that every year when they take in more revenue than budgeted, they set aside money in that reserve fund. They call it the rate stabilization account. And the purpose of that account is to, down years when they can't cut expenses fast enough to catch up with declining revenue because we're in a recession, they supplement their operating budget by drawing on that reserve fund. And that has minimized the need their need to have rate increases in down years.
All right.
And they're the only air traffic provider in the world so far that does that. And it's ridiculous. Everybody has the same problem and should be doing it.
Yeah, I think a lot of states that, or the few states that have a fund like that in their general fund call it a rainy day fund. And
exactly.
It certainly
is
raining now.
Well, it's pouring.
Bob, you referred to the Spanish air traffic control system in your current edition of ATC Reform News. Has that become a caricature of where our air traffic control system's headed if we don't get control of it?
Well, it is kind of an extreme case of a system that's not working, that is because of a serious shortage of controllers, or at least the way it's set up. There's a de facto shortage. Controllers are working massive amounts of overtime, some of them making 800,000 and 900,000 euros per year, which would be over $1 million dollars a year, most of it in overtime pay. And the charges for air traffic control in Spain are two or three times as high as in most of the other countries in Europe. And the situation is so out of control that the Spanish government issued a royal decree, basically putting it in effect, taking over control of this AENA, which is what it's called, for a several-year period to negotiate a new agreement on work rules and time and overtime and so forth with the controllers, and to also try to free up the supply of controllers by they're deregulating control towers. Control towers will be opened up to private sector providers that may be able to offer the service cheaper. And if half the airports in Spain have their control towers shifted to the private sector, then those controllers could be relocated to the en route centers and relieve the shortage. That's the idea. So it's basically an emergency situation in Spain right now, and the government is taking a very strong action.
Well, I know I was joking in an email to you that I've convinced my son to learn Spanish and air traffic control.
Right. This is the place to make money in air traffic control these days, for sure.
Well, one of the issues, Bob, I want to talk about after the break here when we come back that has been kind of on the minds of a lot of people who want to equip for ADS-B has been the cost of it and the timeline. We want to talk about that for just a minute. My guest is Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Flack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. And Bob, I want to talk about something you mentioned in ATC Reform News, and it's a story I had not heard anywhere else yet. And that is of what may be a breakthrough in reducing the possible costs of the conversion to ADS-B as a primary navigation technology.
Right. This is coming out of MITRE Corporation, which is a federally funded nonprofit research entity, a spinoff from MIT, actually, where I graduated. And they have, this was originally the impetus for this research they've been doing is UASs or UAVs, particularly small ones, that if they're going to be operating in U.S. airspace, they need to show up. And if we're shifting from radar surveillance to ADS-B as the surveillance method, they will need to show up on ADS-B. The problem is many of them are so small and so light that traditional ADS-B units wouldn't fit, would be too heavy, and so forth. There's also a problem of gliders. Some gliders operate away from having other air traffic, but there's some parts of the country where gliders right now operate in the space where airlines fly. And gliders, except for a few of them, don't even have electrical systems. So, I mean, how do you have an ADS-B that has to plug into the plane's electrical system in a glider? So what MITRE's developed is a prototype that they've now tested on light single-engine planes and on UAVs of an ADS-B box that the parts cost of the lowest, smallest version is $175. And the then that's for a send only that identifies the aircraft to the ADS-B system, but one that can also receive and do ADS-B in, the parts cost is $400. That's not counting a display, mind you, but $400 for that. Now those, of course, are using commercial off-the-shelf parts, not FAA certified. So
right, right.
I mean, there's a long ways to go from these boxes that are in flight test now on at MITRE. And a device that would be fully FAA certified, nobody has any idea how much the cost would end up being using all FAA certified parts and the embedded cost of the long certification period. But it's still a very good news possibility that something much simpler and lower cost, and this device, including the two-way one, operates using either the plane's electrical system or four AA lithium batteries. So, I mean, you're talking about really simple.
All right. Now, you mentioned that this is nonprofit, and in your newsletter, you mentioned that because of the way this corporation is set up, its technology could be shared at a nominal fee by for-profit
That's
corporations.
Right.
So the Garmins and the Aspens and the Avidines of the world could still stay in the market.
Exactly. Yes, and the guy Rob Strain, at MITRE that I interviewed on this, told me that at least two firms have already signed licensing agreements.
Okay.
He didn't tell me the names, but
Bob, the other side of MITRE's relationship to the federal government is that there might be some incentive on the FAA's part. One would think, if the FAA wants equipage to happen, for it to cooperatively work with MITRE to get this stuff through the certification process.
At
something other than a staggering cost.
Right. I think that's a realistic hope. I don't have any inside knowledge of FAA's current thinking on this, but they really do see the need to get ADS-B equipage widely spread. At the very least, the ADS-B out so that all the aircraft show up to the system. It's only when that happens that we'll be able to start shutting down ground-based surveillance that is getting very costly to maintain. And as stuff wears out, it'd be really a shame to replace it with something that will have a 20-year life if it's going to be shut down in 3 years or 5 years after you buy the new one. So it's very important to get the equipage out there fleet-wide really sooner than the 2020 deadline that FAA has currently set as a tentative mandate date.
Well, Bob, I'm going to encourage our listeners to go to the Reason Foundation's website at reason.org. And you have two newsletters available. We've been talking about the ATC reform news, but tell us about your other one.
Well, the other one is called Airport Policy News, and it covers all kinds of topics relating to the operation and financing of airports, including airport privatization, a lot of coverage of aviation airport security issues, and just other interesting things that I think should be more widely known about creative ideas in airport management. So, and both of them come out every month, and they're posted. The archives are posted on the reason.org website.
And an opportunity to get an email when a new one comes out as well.
Oh, yeah. Anybody who wants it can just email me, and I'm glad to add them to the list for either or both newsletters.
Well, Bob, as always, we know you're busy. The issues you work on never go away. Some people call that job security.
Oh, it's certainly job security.
Well, we appreciate your taking a few minutes out to talk to our listeners today.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.